episode, we're going to talk about hormone testing, saliva versus blood. I'm Dr. Valerie with Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So this question comes up actually quite often. What testing form? On our last one, we talked about the timing of it. This one is going to be which testing is the best. Now, I wouldn't profess that you and I are experts necessarily on saliva testing. We are biased as we do blood. But why don't you read the question from Sabrina, and we'll kind of dive in, because she put some good things here.
So from Sabrina, my practitioner doesn't use hormone blood testing. She says that only saliva testing accurately reflects biased transdermal application. I am on a static dose, and I have to skip it 36 hours of that dose to get the saliva testing done. Otherwise, it reads too high. I've tested my blood estradiol a couple of times, and it never gets above 40. My prescription is 2.5 milligrams estradiol, 1.5 milligrams estriol, 2.5 milligrams testosterone, 80-20 biased ratio, 1/4 gram, 1/4 gram, twice a day. How do I know if I'm getting enough hormone to help my heart, brain, and bones if the blood testing is so low, but the saliva is in range? I also take 200 milligrams of progesterone capsules at night. My progesterone does not at all go down the pathway that makes you sleepy, as indicated on a urine test. I'm not sure where it goes instead.
Good question. And I know you and I were talking about,
but I like it.
Yeah, there's a few of them there. I know you and I are reviewing this one, so why don't we review her dose for a second? So she says 2.5 milligrams of estradiol, 1.5 milligrams of estriol, 2.5 milligrams of testosterone, but she calls that an 80-20 ratio. I know you're writing some notes over there, so it doesn't look like she's got an 80-20 ratio between her estradiol and estriol.
No, I mean, when you're doing hormone replacement with a biased, you can do any dose of estradiol to estriol that you want. You don't have to do these ratios, 90-10, right. 80-20, 50-50, but one of the most common, I guess you could say like a size medium for a biased, is what's called an 80-20 ratio. But that 80-20 ratio means there's 80%, so in your dose, 80% of it is estriol, E3, and 20% of it is estradiol. And that's because estradiol is a lot stronger than estriol. Estriol is very gentle. So when you say an 80-20, you want a little bit more of the estriol and a little bit less of the estradiol. So what's interesting here is she's got more estradiol, 2.5 milligrams, with less estriol, 1.5 milligrams. So that's not even anywhere considered an 80-20 ratio. It might be more of, if you were to flip it, I mean, looking at this would be more of
like a 40-60.
When I was doing the math, would be 2.54 milligrams of estradiol, and that would be 1.4 milligrams of estriol if you wanted to be perfect for a 40-60 ratio, because you always put the estriol first, the estradiol later. So 80-20. In this case, like you said, I would call it more of a 40% estriol and 60% of estradiol.
Right. Yeah. So it just caught my attention.
And then to teach people so they understand.
So they know how to read their own prescriptions.
Oh, yeah. This stuff is confusing. You know, a lot of people will take a picture of it for me if they're coming from another practitioner, because they have like different words. Like VBS, depending on what, because the creams, there's like a Versa-based cream and there's different types of base cream. So they put those abbreviations in there with the numbers and milligrams, and then sometimes milligrams and milliliters. So I can see where it'd be confusing.
Sure, sure. And then she says she's doing 1/4 gram twice a day. So typically if you're using a TopiClick, that's the little device where you turn the knob on the bottom and some cream comes out the top. Usually 2 clicks is 1/2 gram. So she's only doing 1 click twice a day. So her total dosing is 4 milligrams, but she's only doing half of that daily. So she's only getting 1 milligram in the morning, 1 milligram in the evening.
So technically for her estriol, one application would be 0.375 milligrams of estriol, the E3. And then that, let's see, 2.5 divided by, and then that would be 0.625 milligrams of estradiol per application. So that's not a lot. But, you know, the neat thing with creams and the TopiClicks is you have the versatility to start off low and work your way up. So you can start with 1/4 gram, which is 1 click. You can go up to 1/2 gram. You can go up to 3.5 3/4 of a gram. You can work your way up depending on how someone's doing. So that's a neat thing with the cream, is you can just layer it or increase it or decrease it if it's a little bit too high. But I would say, so it looks like she's on 0.375 milligrams of estriol. That's a very low dose, and 0.625 milligrams of estradiol per application.
Right.
You know, once in that, in the morning there.
Overall, basically a two, would you say just shy of 2 milligrams, or how did you come up with these numbers again?
So she's on 1.5 milligrams of estriol.
Oh,
so
I, you divide, oh, I see. That by, okay, four, yeah, I see. Okay.
That's,
yeah,
a quarter, okay, gram. Okay. So this is per gram. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Per gram. Okay. All right. She's asking then the difference between blood testing, saliva testing. She mentions a urine test in there as well about her progesterone. Now, the fact that she says she has to skip her hormones 36 hours before doing the saliva test, in some ways gives a clue. That's part of the reason why you and I don't use saliva testing.
Yeah, because I found it was so sensitive that if someone had their hormones on and they went and did the saliva test, it would look so falsely elevated. And I knew that it wasn't. So I can understand the concept of, hey, wait, but... Well, one thing is, I don't want to miss my hormones for over a day. I want to take my hormones every day.
Well, if you're skipping for 36 hours, your hormones are back to zero pretty much. I mean, they're not, you're not going to have
blood levels. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to have any residual. But then that means, in that context, if you compared them both 36 hours later, your serum levels are going to be really low. And if you have to wait 36 hours to get a saliva test, honestly, you know, neither one of them are perfect. Even when we talked on the last one, even serum is not perfect, because you still get some discrepancies and you don't see the changes you want based on the last episode we did was based on timing of when to test. So this is just an extension of that, you know, that same idea. I think it comes down to, honestly, like we said in the last one, it comes down to the practitioner's preference and what they're comfortable interpreting based on the patterns they see after patient after patient after patient. I think the jury is sort of still out. Like, what's the best way to test? I don't think there is one per se.
No, I mean, I do know quite a few practitioners that do saliva and they get really good results. Their clients really love working with them. It's what you feel comfortable with. We've done it all, but I will say we've been doing the blood testing for 20 years. And I will say it is like a snapshot. It's a number on a piece of paper. It does not reflect who you are as a human being. It just gives us a little bit more data to put it collectively all together to come up with, you know, our recipe for HRT. But I do like the blood. I do feel like her dosing just off the bat without even doing any testing is probably a little bit low.
Yeah.
But it,
which is why she says with serum testing, she's had trouble getting that number up. Mm-hmm. With a 2 milligram daily amount of biased, it's not going to change. It's not going to change too much.
Well, really, it's not 2 milligrams. That's 1.25 milligrams of estradiol. And that would be 0.625 milligrams, right, of estriol.
Well, the total is 4, right? And she's doing 1/4 gram twice a day. So she's doing two clicks daily, one in the morning and one in the evening.
You're doing something that, you know, as a practitioner, this sounds like normal language to somebody else. They'd be like, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Sure, sure.
So a biased total is where you say it's a certain dose. It's a combination of the estriol and the estradiol. So like a 5 milligram of a biased would be, you know, that's that combination of the estriol and the estradiol. But I think that you're maybe confusing that because this isn't an 80-20. You're just saying a biased 4 milligrams. As opposed to saying how much estradiol is in there versus how much estriol.
Okay.
Because estradiol is stronger, right?
Okay. Well, I'm just going based on, I think the 80-20 is the wrong part, but I think the other two numbers might be more accurate. So I'm assuming based on what she wrote, she actually wrote down milligrams, that the total amount of estrogen is in her dose is 4 milligrams per gram. Would you agree?
Yeah, 4 milligrams combined of estriol and estradiol.
Yes. Yeah. And then she's doing 1/4 gram twice a day. So she's doing one click in the morning and then one click in the evening.
Half a gram total for the 24 hours of that bias.
So if it's four, then she's...
I like to get into the math. Of course I want to get into the nitty-gritty of how much estriol versus how much estradiol.
And that's where you and I are a little different. So she's doing four. She's doing half of that daily. So she's doing 2 milligrams daily. But now, like you said, it's broken up. The 2 milligrams that she's using is broken up into the specific amounts of estradiol and estriol.
So on a total 24-hour period, she's doing estriol 0.625 7.5 milligrams, and then an estradiol, which would be, that would be.
See, this is why you sat in the front of the class and I sat in the back of the class for exactly that reason. Like you always sat in the front row and I sat in the back row for exactly that reason.
You can manipulate these doses with a compounding pharmacy any way you want. So if she's looking for, you know, she's having more night sweats and hot flashes, we might want to raise up the estradiol, but maybe not the estriol. If she's having some brain fog and hair stuff, I might want to raise up the estriol but instead of the estradiol.
At a 2 milligram daily dosage, we're splitting hairs.
I know.
Splitting hairs. That's my point. Is I'm rounding it up, and you're trying to get into those specific numbers. The dose overall is just too low. And especially if she's getting a blood level on a blood test of only 40.
Absolutely.
You're never, 2 milligrams is never going to raise it above that. Mm-hmm. It's just never going to go up high enough where she wants it to protect her bones or brains or heart, you know, everything. That's where the dosage, that's why when these questions come in from Ask the Doctor, you know, or other, you know, through email or whatever, the ratio doesn't tell us anything. It's the milligram amount that tells us, is this appropriate? Should it go up? Should it go down? You know, that gives us some actionable information. To potentially, if this was a patient of ours, how would we adjust that so they can feel better?
No, I agree. So I would say, you know, if her blood serum is at 40, we've been doing blood for a long time, her dose is low. But it also depends on her as well, because what do you think about her 200 milligrams of progesterone she takes at night as an oral capsule?
Well, it doesn't sound like it's helping her sleep. Right? She's you know, got a comment there that, you know, it. Now, sleeping at that point, 200 milligrams is a pretty good dose.
It is, but it's interesting because when you take an oral progesterone, and you know this as well as I do, it can cross a blood-brain barrier. There's a metabolite it converts into allopregnanolone, which stimulates the GABA receptors, which can lower cortisol, and it's supposed to make you sleep really good, and your mood's really happy, and you're not irritable. But in some really stressed-out women, as you know, which can be a lot of us, and really stressed-out women where those adrenals are working hard, is that progesterone can actually, but it does it by not so much in the brain, but more with your, in your adrenal cort, I think maybe it's the medulla or the cortex, somewhere in the adrenal glands, that progesterone can convert into cortisol. So that's the weird thing with all these hormones is people think that they're like, they're a map. They're not really a map. Mm-hmm. They're all fluid. They can go different directions depending on what's happening in the environment, whether it's in your brain or physically in your environment, right. Is progesterone can help augment cortisol through the brain and also through the hypothalamus and a whole bunch of other things. So progesterone can actually buffer and lower cortisol, but it can also convert into cortisol, right. Which is why she's probably feeling, you know, Sabrina's feeling the opposite of the nighttime sleepies. It's probably more like the nighttime anxieties.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We've had that, you know, now usually oral progesterone, sustained release oral progesterone, very well tolerated across the board. You know, 90% of women are going to respond well to some dosage. Now, if they're on hormones like she is, usually a standard 100 milligrams, and then you work your way up from there. Maybe in a particular situation, would you consider going down to 75, or is 100 kind of a hard rule for you?
100, if they have a uterus, 100 is pretty a hard rule. I do feel like with the rhythmic dosing, because that's the avenue is, okay, so she said hers is not going into the sleepy, you know, cuddly with the 200, so you just wouldn't want to raise it up to 400. You'd probably want to figure out a way to kind of calm the stressors and try to calm that, the why her body is wanting to produce that progesterone into more of a stimulant metabolite, or like cortisol, that stressor metabolite. Sure. Even pregnenolone is kind of like, they call it the mother hormone. Pregnenolone can convert into progesterone. That's why pregnenolone is really beautiful for perimenopausal women, because it helps support their progesterone without necessarily giving them progesterone. Yeah. But if you're really stressed out, or maybe you're really mentally stressed or physically stressed, even training for a marathon, physical stress, is that pregnenolone can turn into DHEA and turn into testosterone. So hormones will just go whatever direction. So you're not really just like, here, take more of this, is figuring out, you know, what's, you know, taking that data, like we always say, but then what is your life like compared to somebody else's life? That's why hormone replacement, and I'll say this and stand on a soapbox, is not a cookie cutter dose, you know, or a cookie cutter recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Yeah. We've seen that a few times where you give them some progesterone expecting good things, and all of a sudden it just lights them up like a Christmas tree, and now they can't sleep. And like I said, they got that anxiety when it's supposed to sort of do the opposite of that. Now, I do think, you know, menopausal woman not sleeping very well, You know, that's a lack of estrogen sort of issue, right?
Yeah, also partly, that estrogen has a huge impact on that too.
And then the impact that the estrogen has on the progesterone and the progesterone receptors, you know, it gets, you know, it gets as complicated as you want it to. Now, most of the time in a clinical setting with a patient, it doesn't need that kind of manipulation or that kind of insight, because usually things work, you know, the way you want them to most of the time. But yeah, you run into these situations where, you know, you just sort of keep running into obstacle after obstacle. And that can be really challenging, especially if the patient's been using hormones for a while and they're not getting the results that they want.
Yeah, so I would even, just in this case or something similar to this, and you'd probably do the same, I would imagine, is we'd back up, because she's right. The bones, the heart, brain health, that long-term, because I always say menopause is probably the biggest risk factor for chronic disease, inflammatory disease for women by far. You know, that's sure. Menopause is that hormonal decline. So we are looking downstream at, you know, her heart, her bones, her brain health. But I would say probably coming upstream a little bit and figuring out, well, why is that progesterone making you have that cortisol response or that anxiety response, or it's not making, not stimulating the GABA receptors? What is it doing and why is it doing that? And then, like you said, is probably readjusting that, you know, that estradiol and estriol, not based on the numbers, but, you know, based on what's going on with her in her life.
Yeah, I mean, certainly this podcast is about saliva versus blood. You know, that's a good question. I don't really have a definitive answer one way or the other. Like, which one should you choose? I think they both have merit. I think there's benefits to both. If you're looking at we've been talking about cortisol. If you're going to look at a cortisol, saliva is the best way to do that.
Cortisol testing, saliva is by far the best.
Even urine testing is a great way to look at cortisol. Where blood, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, that's where it's sort of the opinions sort of diverge a little bit as far as which one is the more preferred. You and I have just always kind of gone one direction, partially because it's covered by people's insurance. People are used to it. It's relatively simple. They're getting other blood work done by their primary care or other practitioners. It just sort of seemed like an easy path for you and I to take.
And when we got started in 2003 and 2004, you know, ordering a saliva test, you know, I was in Nevada. There was a place in Washington. I would order it because I didn't have a place in Nevada, and they'd have to snail mail it, and then they'd have to freeze it. It was a process to, you know, get the saliva. Now I think it's different. They can drop ship things in a second. Yeah. I mean, you can order things online before, you know, I had to call and fill out this form. Remember that form? It's different now. So things are, you know, so I can understand. And I like I was looking at some saliva testing from a patient I just talked to last week that she had another practitioner do that. And it was, you know, it's really interesting. And you could see she had them done every 6 months and you could see the change. So it wasn't about so much what is the level saying on there, but we could see this consistent change of her going into menopause with that saliva, estrogen, and progesterone coming down, way down. So that is one way that you can take objective data. Even the those weight scales they use at the gym, or you can buy at home. They do your percentage body fat.
Yeah.
I don't think they're very accurate, but they give you a baseline. So you get this one number. You go do whatever you're going to do, and you come back, redo it again. If it's changed, something's changed. It might not be perfectly accurate, but you can see a change there. So that's where I feel like a lot of practitioners, it's not about just looking at some, you know, some chart and saying 60 is good, 40 is bad. It's looking at it collectively on how it's changing.
Yeah. And I know that there's probably been some comparisons between saliva and blood. Are you aware of any actual comparisons where is anyone?
She's totally dreaming. It's so cute. Sorry.
She's woofing back there.
Sorry, what was that?
Yeah. Have you seen any comparisons where, you know, some of the labs, have they done any, or practitioners done any direct comparisons? I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that. In a research format, I know I've seen something about alluding to that, but I'm not sure of the exact study name where they've looked at X number of, saliva test versus X number, same patient, X number of blood tests. And I don't know if that even exists.
That is ringing a bell a little bit. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
Might be stuck in there somewhere.
I mean, that'd be very interesting in a situation like this. Now, granted, there's some insurance and some costs there, but you know, doing them side by side, and I've never really done that before. I would imagine somebody has, where you do one of each for both, and then you sort of compare and contrast based on someone's dosage. That would be, in some ways, maybe best way to sort of tease that out.
It would be so difficult because let's say like that one patient, you know, she just did a saliva test in March, and here it is, we're going to do a blood test in June. March and June are still different. So even though she's going into menopause, when we test her blood work in June, is that going to be something I would compare to her saliva test?
Well, no, I'm saying if you just had them done
the exact same time.
Yeah, on the same day, you provided a saliva sample on one day and you went right to the lab
We could do that ourselves.
We could do that ourselves. Yeah, we could set up our own little experiment.
I could do that. Yeah.
You could. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know if that does exist. Maybe I'm just making that up. It seems like it should have been done by now. And if it hasn't, why hasn't it been done? You know, but you know, that seems like a sort of an obvious thing from a research perspective. But yeah, you know, honestly, saliva is, I know, very popular in the functional medicine space. A lot of practitioners like to use saliva in urine testing, and I think there's good justification for all those.
Oh yeah, and there's some great, very reputable companies that have that. Mm-hmm. I do think probably when we used to do them 20 years ago, it was definitely an out of pocket completely at all was cash. Yeah. You know, where blood work could be a little bit covered by your insurance. Now I'm not sure all hormone saliva tests, I don't know how that works. I mean, you and I don't work in that whole insurance realm, so it might still just be cash. The urine tests are probably more cash, but maybe there's a little bit of an issue with that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
they are good tests. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's some validity to, you know, your eye's preference has just always been to do blood. And honestly, I don't think, just like she said, she's got to skip 36 hours prior to the testing. You know, to stop her hormones, you did that with serum, and your levels are going to be
the levels will be zero.
They're going to be they won't be zero, but they'll be pretty much at the bottom of the reference range for the most part.
And we want to take our. I don't want to miss my hormones for 36 hours.
36 hours is a long time.
12 hours.
But then that right there, if there's no hormone, so if you're dosing your bias, like she says, you're both dosing your bias every 12. We recommend every 12 hours, so morning and evening. You're skipping for 36 hours, there's no estradiol left in your blood that's coming from that prescription. So if you're still getting a saliva test that's still reading a little bit on the higher side, what is that really, where is that coming from? Because serum, it's certainly not that way.
No, it wouldn't be in serum, but just like when you do progesterone cream, testing progesterone cream blood-wise, it always comes back low because I think that goes more through the lymphatics because it bypasses the digestion, so it doesn't go into the bloodstream as easy. It's more you'd have to test the lymphatics, and you can't do that.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, I'm getting way too technical.
Yeah, but blood progesterone is always going to be, if they're taking it, even from the night before, as we talked about on the last one, it's always going to register above one.
It should.
Now, sometimes I've had women that take it at night. I know you've seen this too. They take it at night and it still will say 0.7.
Yeah, it's too low.
Yeah. So, but what if they're already at, let's say, 200 milligrams already? I mean, I actually at 200 milligrams, I don't usually see it like that.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Sustained release, I don't see it. Sometimes on the instant release, we might see that, but then it still means the dose is, if they have a uterus, I want it higher than that. So we raise it up. And then based on how they feel as
Even if it was from 12 hours before, let's say they took it at night, 10 o'clock at night, and they didn't go to the lab until 2. You wouldn't.
Oh yeah, no. Later. Anywhere between like 1 and 3, I feel good with. But under
the number
for progesterone that next morning to do that blood draw. But they have a uterus and it's under 1. We want to probably raise up that progesterone a little bit, or I'll have them, take it. You can always take. Some people they get a little groggy the next morning when they took their progesterone that night before, so I'll switch it to an instant release from the sustained release, or I'll have them take it a little bit earlier, like. Hey, take it 8:30 instead of 11:30.
Right. So, not a real strong opinion, saliva versus blood. I'd say you and I are just more, we just lean towards blood. But, you know, like I said, I think there's some merit to doing saliva. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, practitioners, that's their preference. That means they've looked at lots of tests and they see those patterns that start to come out. Once you've seen enough, and that's really what, being a practitioner is really all about, that pattern recognition. You know, to be able to see, okay, I've seen hundreds of these saliva tests or blood tests, whatever, you know, those patterns start to, you know, become fairly apparent from one patient to the next. And I think that's more of the issue than one being better than the other. Because I think they all have their place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So should we wrap this one up?
Let's wrap her up.
If you have any comments or questions down below, of course, you know where the comment section is. If you have a more of a private question you'd like to ask, you can go to our website. There's a little tab up at the top or in the bottom in the footer that says Ask the Doctor. Just put your name and email in there, and it goes to our website. You and I are the only two that actually see that. So feel free to ask your question. The names we use for these, we do change everybody's name, so you don't have to worry about any incriminating information, because some of these can be a little bit sensitive as far as what they're talking about. So at least that way it gives you a free space to ask your question. So anything else to add for Sabrina's question?
No, this is great. We also have a newsletter that just came out. I think we're on our fourth one coming out.
I think it's the fourth one.
Yep,
actually going
tomorrow.
Out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This will be mm-hmm. There will probably be on the fifth or sixth by the time this episode gets out. Mm-hmm. Seems like you've been having a lot of fun writing it.
Oh yeah. No, I love the newsletter. It is my labor of love. So mm-hmm. if you're interested, just put in your email and then we'll send it to your inbox twice a month.
Yeah. So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.